Hello, and welcome to the Mobile User Acquisition Show, a podcast to help you unlock tremendous growth for your app. My name is Shamant Rao. I'm the CEO of the boutique growth marketing firm Rocketship HQ and host of the podcast Mobile User Acquisition Show. In each episode, we feature experts in the field of mobile growth and discuss strategies, tips, and pointers from the leading edge of mobile growth marketing. By the end of each episode, you will have gained actionable and tactical insights that will help you make more informed decisions in your own work around growth. The Mobile User Acquisition Show is produced by Merrill Vincent, Content Marketing Manager at Rocketship HQ.
This episode is the recorded version of a Q&A session that I had with Roth Capital Partners for the investor community. The session was hosted by Rohit Kulkarni, the Managing Director, Internet and Capital Markets at Roth Capital Partners, who interviewed me. This is a State of the Union episode in which I zoom out to give an ecosystem-wide view of what has been happening in the mobile advertising ecosystem. In this episode, we discuss how advertisers have evolved post-ETT in the midst of broken measurement and optimization. We talk about what adjustments were made, what channel-wise shifts have happened and what has been driving them, measurement changes and what has been driving them, and we look at what is on the horizon going forward. This episode is an extensive take on the impact of ETT and the path forward. And if you've been in the trenches, you can look at how far we have come and where we're going from here.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rohit. I'm the internet analyst at the Roth MKM. And we're going to be talking about a very kind of timely topic, as in it's been timely for the last 18 months, I would say. But top of mind on every person who's working in mobile advertising and any investor looking at stocks that have a play on mobile advertising, what has Apple done and how is everybody else in the ecosystem adjusting to it? So we're going to talk about a lot of topics. Shamant Rao is probably as good as they come, very technical and as very deep into a lot of moving parts around how mobile app owners are thinking about driving more traffic and optimizing their ad spend as such. We'll talk about iOS, latest changes. We'll talk about return on ad spend, how that's evolving, and many other things around that topic. And essentially, how are advertisers thinking about spending on various different channels, be it Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok, Snap, Google, YouTube, and whatnot. So that's the agenda, mostly Q&A. If you feel like asking a question, just chat it to me, use the Q&A box, or send me an email, and we'll try to weave that into the conversation. Shamant has some prepared remarks, but most of the time we will do just a Q&A. So again, with that, Shamant, thanks for doing this, and mic's yours.
Excellent. Thank you for having me, Rohit. Always excited to share a lot of what we're seeing out in the wild, if you will. So, you know, yeah, this also lets me zoom out and really see the macro perspective. Always happy to share. So what I'm going to do is screen share and walk you all through a very short deck. It's like three slides, but yeah, I'm going to jump into this. So hopefully everyone can see my screen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great. Excellent. Yeah, this is a little bit about us. Again, if you guys are interested in diving in deeper, really get into the podcast, that's a great place to start. A lot of insight and analysis into what's going on in mobile, in acquisition specifically. There's a bit more about us. You know, if you are any companies you know are looking for creative production or growth marketing services, you can come to us directly as well. But for all information, just the podcast is always the great place to start. Right. So, and this slide really includes what's been top of mind. These are good jumping off points for any questions or really top of mind in terms of a lot of the conversations that I am having, I'm seeing out in the marketplace when I speak to founders, when I speak to marketers. These are some of the themes that I see. Right. So, Rohit, I don't know if you have a preference for any jumping off points.
I think just wanted a quick intro. And in terms of just to kick off the conversation, what I would love to hear from you is kind of 22 was not a good year, as in there is no easier way to say that. But when it comes to the impact of Apple and macro and the war in Ukraine and various different external factors that affected all the advertising companies that we follow, it was not a good year. So when you specifically peel out the IDFA changes and how every quarter progressed, maybe just talk about the lessons learned during 22 and how we are set up entering into 23 when it comes to measuring advertising performance.
Yeah, right. I think the one big trend I'm seeing is in 2022, people still try to cling on to the older measurement paradigm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very clear now that it's just not sustainable, right? And it's also become increasingly clear that a lot of the digital slowdown is primarily precipitated by ATT. In fact, I was reading this piece that pointed out the Q4 sort of revenues and financial results. A lot of the non-digital companies, Walmart, Nike, all of these folks, Coke, their earnings, their share prices were mostly on track. A lot of their financials grew year on year. Again, I can't remember the exact numbers, but a lot of digitally focused companies did not. Mm-hmm. This is Facebook, Snap, and all of these folks. And certainly a lot of app-focused companies, which are more like AppLovin, Unity, Playtika, all of those had very big downturns. And really, I think what I took away was a lot of the slowdown is precipitated by ATT, much less so by what were broadly described as macroeconomic headwinds. Because, you know, as I said, a lot of the offline companies were not hit anywhere as hard, right? I think a lot of marketers and executives and leaders have just come to terms with the fact that, you know, it is ATT that's slowing us down. That's nothing else.
I see. And then in terms of just the progression of how advertisers were trying to adjust to the changes as the year progressed, I think 1Q of last year was probably the first big quarter or that people actually realize that things aren't working. So maybe at least from a investor perspective, things have improved as the year progressed. So from your lens, talking to your clients, how did measurement and ad performance trend, did it actually improve or are we still at like Q3, Q4, 21 standpoint?
Sure. So measurement is not going to improve, right? Because it's a protocol dictated by Apple. And Apple did introduce SKAN 4.0. Mm-hmm. It is not a dramatic improvement in measurement. I think the only thing that SKAN 4.0 does is if you are already at high volumes in terms of installs, in terms of purchases, in terms of conversion events, you get less obfuscation of events, right? So, but I would say that is very marginal and the overall SKAN protocol is not changed. So measurement-wise, nothing has changed, right? So, and I don't think it will ever change. I mean, obviously, I don't think it will ever go back to having the kind of deterministic accuracy that we had 3 years or 4 years ago. So I don't think that is going to happen at all. Like I said, people are coming to terms with the fact that deterministic measurement is gone. There will have to be non-deterministic, fuzzy, if you will, measurement. You know, that's sort of the third point on my slide where people, I think there's some amount of movement towards embracing non-deterministic measurement. But I would just say measurement continues to be a casualty.
I see. Okay. And when it comes to moving towards non-deterministic or probabilistic measurement, what are the various ways that people are trying to do it? As in given, and is this still a work in progress or do people feel that these new ways of doing probabilistic measurement is something that people are getting more comfortable with?
I would say it's a gradual process because the skill set you need for probabilistic measurement is very different. And a lot of teams I still see don't have that. And, you know, as an example, I was talking to somebody who was like, look, they were talking about booking.com because they knew somebody there, because the booking.com spends billions and they have a team that's dedicated to measuring the incrementality of everything they do.
Yeah.
And that's obviously one extreme where they have a very dedicated team for this. Very few other companies have that level of dedicated resourcing. And in fact, you know, I worked with public companies and a lot of their analytics teams were not really focused on this problem, on deducing incremental impact of ad spend. That was not a project they were all focused on in the past. So I would say, I think the big hurdle really is in the skill set of the people that, or skill set of marketers and the extended teams. You know, folks are working on building the skill set, but again, it's been slower than you would like, just because it's also harder to justify, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a CFO would be like, look, was my money on Facebook well spent? And if yes, by how much?
Yeah.
You know, 4 years ago, you would have said, we spent X dollars, we got back X dollars. Now, if you're going to say, hey, we think there's an incremental revenue so much, but I can't say that with deterministic certainty, it's not nearly as easy a conversation to have. So I think a big challenge is organizational here. I do see a gradual movement and shift towards embracing these probabilistic models.
Okay. And so is there a feast or famine situation where larger companies are now less worse off than much smaller companies that are still trying to figure out how to best allocate their ad dollars?
Yeah, 100%, right? So I think a lot of larger companies are much better off for a number of reasons. One, as I said, Scan 4.0 tilts the balance in the favor of larger companies, mm-hmm. because it says the more event data you have, the less we are going to obfuscate signal. Apple's justification is, well, if you have more event data, people can't reverse engineer private information from that. So, you know, if you're getting 10,000 installs a day, it's much harder to reverse engineer one person's data. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting 10 installs a day, much easier to reverse engineer one person's data. So if you're getting 10,000 users, we're not going to block your conversion value. That's number one, right? So number two is, you know, if you're a larger company, you are able to cast a wider net in terms of the channels you use, and you can be untethered from scan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was actually talking to somebody that I was looking at Rovio's financials, and they were like, yeah, we still continue to spend $250K per day on all our games for user acquisition. A lot of that does go to non-deterministic, non-scan channels, which could be, you know, influencers, partnerships. So a lot of that does go to non-scan channels. And if you are large and if you're catering to a mass market, you can afford to spend on channels like influencers, which are not directly trackable. And of course, if you're a larger company, you also have the resourcing to run non-deterministic measurement on all of these channels as well. And so for all of those reasons, definitely the larger companies are in a better position, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess a question on what Facebook has been kind of communicating to investors with regards to how certain kind of model conversions and various different tools that they have implemented over the last, call it 6, 9, 12 months, are getting progressively better results for advertisers. Maybe unpack that as to what is Facebook doing exactly from your standpoint, and when a certain advertiser uses Facebook's tools and certain advertiser does not use Facebook tools, what's kind of the delta there?
Yeah, right. So that's a good point, right? So definitely when I said measurement continues to be broken, performance has improved. And I can unpack that in the context of what you're saying.
Okay.
Right. So I often like to say measurement is broken, performance is not broken. And a part of what's been driving the improvement on Facebook side has been, you know, them using conversion API on a lot of the e-com front to ingest more data. So they're able to maximize the signal that they have. They also have had a lot of automated campaigns, which basically automatically optimize for different assets within each campaign. But it is still limited by the conversion data that is passed on. So for instance, you know, if there's a game which gets very few conversions within the first 24 to 48 hours, Facebook still has a hard time optimizing for that. Right? So a lot of games, what they've done is if their conversions were happening after 2, 3, 4 days, and synthetic conversion within the first 24 hours, just so that Facebook gets more signal. So part of why Facebook's improved is just because advertisers engineered the system so that they could give more signals to Facebook. And of course, Facebook has been building on top of its automation tools. Facebook has been pushing its tool set of conversion API to a lot of advertisers, and they have been embracing a lot of this. So I think all of these have contributed to performance improving on Facebook in particular.
Maybe the why behind performance improving, maybe just oversimplify that a little bit. Is that because of the conversion APIs that they have implemented, or are there any other reasons fundamentally that the performance on Facebook you think has improved during 22?
I would say conversion APIs, I would say the single biggest part of it, because I think performance is really a function of the conversion event volume that Facebook receives mm-hmm. from an advertiser. You know, if an advertiser just isn't sending any purchase data, Facebook just cannot learn. And that was really the biggest damage that ATT did, which is it cut off that stream of purchase data or seriously damaged it, right? And what conversion API did is really resuscitate a lot of that conversion data stream. So Facebook has an increased amount of signal to optimize based off of, right? What Facebook's, you know, so I think I would say the other contributors being just stuff like Facebook Shops, where Facebook does not have to rely on conversion data coming in from Apple. So obviously the conversion stream is intact, completely unhurt by ATT. So certainly I think that has helped improve optimization as well.
I see. Okay. And maybe another hypothesis I wanted to run by you is kind of, are there kind of situations where an advertiser that worked with Facebook and they have continued to kind of experiment with all these new tools, and the first round of advertising, they spend a week trying to learn from that, second, third, fourth round. And by the time they're done with maybe a few months of testing, the advertisers that are going through these iterations are actually coming out, sharing more data and coming out much more farther along than people who are experimenting for the first time ever, first time customers with no data and no history on Facebook. Is there value in iteration and history? And is that kind of also helping, for example, the performance that we could potentially see in 1Q, 2Q, the same advertiser would be better off in 2Q than 1Q because of the history that they're building with this new system?
100%, right? So the account history is a big determinant of performance, right? And that is something the Facebook reps are very open and vocal about as well. So if there's an advertiser with almost no history of performance, it's just much harder. And I would say it's become even harder post-ATT, because at least pre-ATT, so to take an example, let's just say if you're a meditation app, pre-ATT, you're completely new, Facebook would show your ad to users of other meditation apps mm-hmm. and purchasers of other meditation apps, and you would be able to get performance ramped up fairly quickly. Now, right, post-ATT, again, Facebook can still show your ads to users of other meditation apps, but the probability with which they can identify users and high-value users of other meditation apps is not very high. So it's much less accurate now. And definitely, I think that for a completely new advertiser, there is a ramp-up period that is much slower than it used to be pre-ATT. You know, I think the other variable is, you know, for somebody that's been running and iterating on an account, it's not just the algorithm that's learning, but it's also the advertiser that's learning about the ad creatives that are working, right? So for some of the advertisers we work with, we're spending multiple hundreds of thousands. We test anywhere from 15 to 20 ads per month. So somebody that's been testing 15, 20 ads per month has a much better idea of what's performing than somebody who's run no tests. You know, so somebody who's run no tests is basically starting with a huge handicap just because of the creative learnings, but also the algorithmic learnings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe talking about the changes that have happened in 23 or maybe the last 90 days, what have been the biggest changes coming from Facebook in the last 90 days or in the next few months? What do you see from their sales guys as the big potential changes that they might be doing?
Yeah, right. So I think one of the biggest things I'm hearing from them is really that they are looking to integrate generative AI into their campaign dashboards. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the details are still TBD, but you know, having played around with other tools, I can envision how this could play out. You know, it could be, look, you enter a prompt for the kind of user you're looking for, and they're going to generate images and ads based on the kinds of users you're looking for. And I think that can be a huge game changer because even though Facebook's tried to make things as frictionless as possible lately, just in the last couple of years, a big hurdle for a lot of advertisers is still ad creative. You know, if you're looking at a lot of small indie companies, you know, 0 to 5 people companies, they don't have a designer on the team. That is one of the biggest things that's holding them back. You know, I was talking about the creative learnings. A lot of advertisers we inherit really are like running 3 ads for the last 6 months, have not changed anything. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's holding them back. And if Facebook is able to integrate a generative AI tool within its campaign dashboard, that can unlock a lot of learning and efficiencies at the top of the funnel. Right, you know, bottom of the funnel in terms of what ATT has done, like I said, there's no way to get that performance back.
Okay.
But you can make up for that performance loss by making the top of the funnel much more efficient. And I think generative AI is one of the bigger things that I'm hearing about from Facebook in terms of what's on their roadmap as we go ahead.
I see. And in a couple of the topics on Facebook, and then I'll love to repeat those topics on Snap and TikTok as well. In terms of just conversion modeling, maybe just dumb it down for me. What is that? Or modeled conversions? What is that? I'm assuming it is still a probabilistic way. And is this something kind of best thing that Facebook has done since sliced bread?
Yeah, I would say yes, it's been hugely helpful to have for advertisers to get modeled conversions because at least it gives them some amount of confidence in the numbers that they're seeing. At least it gives them something that they can report to their teams rather than going to their teams and saying, I don't know how much my ad spend generated, right? And I think the biggest value in modeled conversions is helping advertisers manage the optics of their marketing reporting. That is the biggest benefit of that, I would say. So what conversion modeling means is Facebook looks at the signals available to it, which includes conversions given by scan, but also other metrics that are available, which could be click-through rates on the ad, install rates on the ad, what percentage of the video was watched, and also who watched the video, right? So if they know that this user, who's Rohit, installed a meditation app, and we know with a very high probability that Rohit might have made a purchase in a different meditation app, I can assign a very high probability to Rohit purchasing a different meditation app, right? So it is a probabilistic model that looks at the identity of the user that is perfectly known to Facebook, behavior of the user on the Facebook platform, which Facebook knows with deterministic accuracy, and the events coming from scan, which Facebook has a somewhat incomplete picture of. Facebook looks at all of these and says, okay, scan says this campaign generated 50 conversions, but because I know who Rohit is, because I know the probability that Rohit made purchases in other meditation apps, I actually think Rohit might have made a purchase here. So I'm going to count Rohit as a conversion in this campaign as well. That's, in short, modeled conversions, I would say. I do want to talk a little bit more about the optics because I do think that's a big piece of why it is important, right? So, you know, with Facebook, really, I think a lot of modeled conversions are at least directionally correct. They match scan. If scan goes up, model conversions go up, and so on and so forth. Where the model conversions aren't as much in line with true performance is on Google, where the performance is dramatically overreported. Google dramatically overreports conversions. That's because Google uses its own analytics. It doesn't even rely on scan. It ingests scan data, but it doesn't report on scan. So it's like, it's just model conversions. We're going to model this based on Firebase. And the result is their CPAs and conversions look outrageously good, mm-hmm. to the point that it's too good to be true. And oftentimes we've run non-deterministic models, like media mix models, and they're like, Google's claiming a lot of credit that they shouldn't have.
I see.
And the advertisers have been spending a lot of money because they trusted Google's numbers, but these were not true conversions. But it helped the advertisers manage their optics and say, oh, Google's doing well, they're spending it. Therefore, we're going to spend a lot of money, which is also, you know, another reason why I think getting non-deterministic measurement is ever more critical right now and going on from here.
I see. I guess you kind of hinted to this a little bit, but just wanted to call out in terms of just the mix of spend that sometimes advertisers need to optimize on. How has that trended? As in, you know, if the first dollar goes to Facebook, then what does the next penny go to? Or how has that kind of just overall pie been broken up over the last 6 months? And are you seeing any shifts, be it from Instagram to TikTok, or be it TikTok coming back to Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, so there's definitely been a significant shift towards TikTok, I would say. You know, part of it is, I think back in 22, a lot of advertisers that had gotten spooked went over to TikTok. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of folks we work with did try Snap. Snap's optimization wasn't nearly as sophisticated. On TikTok, you do see like the instant virality that you still don't see on Snap. So TikTok's definitely done much, much better. TikTok has been a big gainer in the last 6 to 12 months, I would say. You know, it's also that the TikTok team has been fairly aggressive in pushing stuff. So for instance, TikTok has a program just now that says you get free TikTok creatives made by partners like us. My team's a part of this program. Any advertiser that spends 20K and more, they get free creative from us, 20K per month. They have to commit to spending 20K, obviously.
I see. And in terms of where is that money coming from? Is that like, do you have that line of sight into if that advertiser is willing to pay 20,000 to TikTok? Is that like just they found money under their pillow, or is this something that they would have otherwise spent on, say, a Google, YouTube, or Facebook, Instagram, or Snap?
Sure, right. So very anecdotally, a lot of these folks are people who wouldn't have considered TikTok, and they were running on Facebook, they were running on Google, and creative was a hurdle for them with TikTok. They're like, oh, we want to try TikTok, but we really can't get dancing videos. You know, our team can make animations, our team can make designs, but we really can't make animated videos. That was a big hurdle. And what this program enables for them is just to say, okay, we'll take some of a Google budget to of Facebook budget, put it in TikTok. 20K isn't huge for a very large advertiser. We're going to put it in TikTok to test how this works. So really the dollars came as test budgets on new channels. They were diverted from their existing channels, I would say.
Okay. And how is advertising performance kind of measured on TikTok? Is it anecdotally what we have heard, it is still more of a reach and frequency play, less of a bottom of funnel play? Is that what you're seeing? But you tend to work with more performance guys. So how is TikTok handling the problems that Facebook already has had for the last 18 months?
Yeah, right. So TikTok has the same problems because TikTok plugs into scan. Mm-hmm. So TikTok is beholden to Apple's protocol, really, right? And I will say we are seeing it significantly improved performance on TikTok. It is not just a reach and frequency thing. Like you pointed out, Rohit, everyone we work with is performance focused. Mm-hmm. So certainly I think performance has improved. And I think what I would attribute that to is just creative. I think that's the primary piece. And just to unpack that a bit more, with creators. A lot of advertisers have become more comfortable with TikTok style creative. A lot of advertisers have more learnings from TikTok style creators. And as I said, the TikTok team has been fairly vocal and aggressive in pushing tools, not just for advertisers, but also for creators. Like they have something called Spark Ads, where, you know, if you're an advertiser, you can get an influencer's video, plug that into your ads with their consent, of course, right? They have a TikTok ads dashboard, which is somewhat similar to the Facebook ads library. And I would say definitely we get a lot more human support from TikTok. With Meta, it's just very hard to get humans to talk to us, much more so after the layoffs. We manage multiple millions and it's extremely hard to get human support. With TikTok, it's, you know, we get much more direct support, much more direct troubleshooting. So I would just attribute it to all of those factors that the share of TikTok has grown. And like I said, the incentivization certainly doesn't hurt.
Okay. Three questions on TikTok, and I would love to touch on Snap in the time we have. One is, do you feel now, maybe this is like a speaking in terms of second derivatives, but obviously TikTok took share away from maybe Google and Facebook, maybe more from Facebook last year. Maybe based on what you're saying, maybe they take share again this year, but is the amount of share that they would take away from Google and Facebook for people who already experimented a lot on TikTok, is that going to be less, I would say, incremental? Or how do you feel, like if somebody spent $100,000 on TikTok last year and they're going to spend $200,000 on TikTok, where is that extra $100,000 coming from? Is that still coming from Google, Facebook, or is that coming from some other places?
Yeah, I would say in most cases, I would see this coming from Google and Facebook. And I would also point out with a lot of performance advertisers, they don't operate with fixed sum budgets. So it's like if performance is strong, they will find more dollars. So, you know, if Google's doing well, Facebook's doing well, TikTok is doing well, they'll find extra dollars to put into all three.
I see.
And it's not like they will cut one to put dollars into another, assuming the performance is strong. Obviously, if the performance isn't there, then one will have to go to divert budgets to the other.
I see. Okay. That's fair enough. Second is on generative AI on TikTok. Is there anything that they are doing that Facebook is not in terms of helping advertisers and getting their creatives up and running?
So, you know, the teams tell me they are looking into this. They're working on this. Mm-hmm. I would say it's just inherently harder on TikTok just because all of the videos feature humans, all of the ad creator features humans. Whereas on Facebook, that is not the case. It's, you know, much easier to make a generative AI-based ad for a t-shirt than it is for a parent with a kid who's dancing. It's just inherently harder, I would say. So even though they do say they're working on this, I anticipated this to be much harder for TikTok.
I see. That's a fair point. A good point, actually. And last is on TikTok getting banned or any likelihood of that. What's your take? And just advertisers, do you feel that they are adjusting in case TikTok gets banned, or they just don't care about all the regulatory?
So what I'm generally seeing is that advertisers aren't panicking yet. I think the sentiment is TikTok is too big to ban. But I was just pointing out to somebody else, India has banned TikTok, and that's close to a billion people, right? And they have actually banned TikTok. So TikTok is not actually too big to ban. And all it takes is one zealous, again, politics is above my pay grade, but, you know, if there is political will, it can be done. So I have seen precedents. So, and this is something I've actually talked to multiple advertisers about when they've said, oh, it's too big to ban. And then I'm like, India's actually done it. So maybe it's not that big, but I don't see people making contingency plans yet.
I guess if you want to reach people in Montana who are using TikTok, you won't be able to do that because I guess Montana banned TikTok last week, right?
Yeah, I think the question is also just enforcement, right? How are you going to enforce that? Especially at the state level. At the country level, you could do draconian things, as India has indeed done, right? You could do draconian things at the country level, but even then, people use VPN, people use other tools to get through in India, right? And again, an interesting side effect of that in India seems to have been an increasing adoption of Reels, an increasing adoption of some of the local social networks, but it's just hard to envision how that could happen at a state level or at a local level without being very draconian.
I see. Okay. On Snap, you mentioned a couple of things. Where are we with Snap in with regards to their kind of adjustments that they're doing to iOS, latest iOS changes, scan 4.0 tools and whatnot? Do you think they are at par with Facebook? Or if not, how far behind are they?
Yeah. So in terms of scan itself, it's a function of what Apple sends everybody. So there is parity in terms of scan. But in terms of what scans being able to build on top of scan in terms of conversion, you know, modeled conversions, that I do think they've been a lot slower. In fact, for a lot of folks we work with, it's been hit or miss channel. It's not something we've seen consistent performance from. And, you know, I think going out of the gate, if you heard some of the earnings calls from Snap, they were like, yeah, ATT is not going to hurt us. We're going to be fine until the magnitude of the damage really hit them. And I think the other challenge really is Snap. So, you know, in terms of the pecking order, it was Facebook, Google, Snap, TikTok, a couple of years, you know, some time ago, pre-ATT certainly, or just after ATT. And now that TikTok's overtaken them, Snap is almost like an afterthought for a lot of big advertisers. Certainly, you know, if they're out of scale on the bigger channels, they do look at Snap, but it's only if they're out of scale on all of the other channels, I would say.
I see. A couple last questions. One is on Pinterest. Is that on your radar? Where does that stand in the pecking order, if at all? What type of advertisers do you use? If not, that's okay too.
It's not on our radar, and that's because they deprecated their app install product a couple of years ago, which is actually very puzzling because we were actually starting to see performance. And in fact, one of my friends was spending six figures a month on Pinterest. This is for a subscription app. And we were starting to see early signs of success, and very abruptly, they deprecated their app install product. So you can't run performance-based ads for apps on Pinterest, even if you wanted to.
Yeah. I see. Okay. And broadly, to the extent you can say, with regards to just the ad spend that you are seeing from your advertiser base, what is the outlook for the next 90 days? Is this something that you would see a step up in spend from 1Q to 2Q? Just broadly speaking, what does the outlook look like? Any numbers?
Yeah, so I would say Q2 is generally on the slower side, I would say, for most verticals. So I would anticipate a little bit of a slowdown. Again, like I said, the algorithms are getting better. The advertisers have continued to adapt. The measurement's getting better. And almost always Q2 has been a slowdown. Q3, there's a small uptick. Of course, Q4 picks up significantly. Yeah, that's the outlook I generally see.
I see. And just somebody sent me an email. In terms of, is there a way to quantify how far away are we with regards to just measurement or ad performance measurement from versus pre-ATT days on Facebook? As in, and is this something that you think that they can catch up to? Like, that's just a question in terms of, are we at 50%, 60% of ad performance, or are we, what's the trend line look like over the next few months?
Yeah, so I can say it's never going to be 100% because you don't have that level of deterministic data, and you'll never have that. And that pipeline is irreparably broken. So everything that Facebook does, the conversion API, the, you know, conversion modeling can make incremental differences, but it's never going to get to 100%, I would say. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers the question, but, you know, I don't think the pre-ATT thing where Facebook knew exactly what Rohit purchased across 10 different apps, 20 different e-commerce sites, therefore Facebook knew exactly what ad to serve. All of that determinism has been replaced by some amount of probability. Certainly, the understanding that Facebook has that Rohit can buy something that can have a high probability, it's never going to be 100% in the way that it used to be.
I see. Any percentage that you would want to call out? Like, is this like, where were we maybe beginning of 22 and where are we right now? Like, were we 20% and now we are at 50%? Or I don't know.
Yeah. So I would say, I think it's definitely gone up from, 30, 35% in early 22 to anywhere from 55, 60% now. And, with all of the improvements, it can definitely get, there is going to be a diminishing returns just because, like I said, the fundamental sort of building block was the IDFA. If that's gone, it's just very hard to have that kind of determinism in the absence of the IDFA.
I see. Another question in the chat is, like, has Apple's stance towards mobile advertising gotten less worse in a way that if you look at Scan 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, there could be 5.0 at some point in the next, few months probably. So if you look at the progression over the last 2 years, how would you characterize? Is it giving more bells and whistles and tools to mobile advertisers and Facebooks of the world?
So yes, there have been improvements in Scan 4.0, but I would say these have been very marginal. Right. So for instance, they're like, oh, we're going to offer you three postbacks. Instead of in Scan 3.0, you would get one postback only. And that was with a 24-hour window, most typically. Now you have one after 48 hours, one after 7 days, one after 35 days. In theory, that seems great because you're like, oh, I can follow a user for and see what they do after 7 days, what they do after 35 days. And A, it's not cohorted data, and B, it's also what they call a coarse conversion value, C-O-A-R-S-E, which basically means it can only be high, medium, low, and it doesn't actually have conversions, right? Okay. So after 7 days, you get something called high, medium, low. After 35 days, you get something called high, medium, low. So basically, your first conversion value is the only meaningful thing that's happening, which remains mostly unchanged. So, yes, Apple's offering bells and whistles. They haven't been groundbreaking thus far. And I think the other sort of places where Apple's been in the news is, they offered new ad products.
I was going to ask you that. Like, is Apple building their own mobile app advertising platform internally with better products?
Yeah, right. So yes, they have offered a lot of new placements. It's like a today tab, it's like the search tab, the product tab. The problem is the performance is still terrible on all of those. Across everything I have seen, people I know have just stopped testing those just because it's very clear that performance isn't there. And I would point out a lot of the growth that Facebook saw from 2016 to 21 was driven by SMBs, by mom and pop e-com stores that would, spend $200, $300, $400 a day on Facebook. There was just a lot of that, right? And with Apple, with the new ad placements, the performance is just so bad that it's just out of reach of anybody with small budgets. The only people that can afford it is like, if you're like Candy Crush and you're like, oh, I can spend $1 million, I'll treat this as something similar to a TV ad.
Yep.
And that's when it kind of makes sense. So to your point, the new ad placements from Apple have been very ineffective for performance advertisers and certainly for much more so for small and medium advertisers.
I see. Okay. I guess one quick rapid fire question. If you had to choose Facebook, Instagram versus TikTok versus Google properties, what's your kind of most favorite platform for advertisers right now?
Yeah, again, not to generalize, but I would say in the vast majority of cases, we start with Meta just because the scale is very significant. And, there are products that we do start with TikTok if they are very visual, they're very UGC type, they're very responsive to UGC. That's when we do start with TikTok. But I would say in the vast majority of cases, that's Facebook, the next is Google, and the next is TikTok, I would say. But I would say in an increasing number of cases, TikTok is second priority compared to Google.
Okay, awesome, fantastic. I know we are a few minutes over, but I wanted to thank you for your time and thank you for sharing all those thoughts in terms of how things are evolving. It feels things are still in flux and okay, we'll learn more over the next few weeks from these large companies, how their 1Q and 2Q has progressed as such. Okay, thanks, Shamant. Bye-bye. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. If any of this was helpful or instructive, I would love for you to leave us a review or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. This podcast takes a ton of time, effort, and love to produce, and I deeply value every review and every piece of feedback that you share.